This episode of the Mickey Miles podcast is brought to you by MAI Travel and Mouse Fan Travel. And when you are in need of a professional handling of your vacation, be it a Disney vacation or any vacation for that matter, you need to put yourself in the capable hands of the vacation planners at MAI and Mouse Fan Travel. You won't be disappointed. I've been going to them for many a year, and I will continue to be going to them for many a year. They're not just your vacation planner, your agent. They're your partner in making sure that you get the best for your vacation dollar. So visit them at mei-travel.com or mousefantravel.com, and you can also click on their banner at mickeymilespodcast.com.
This is the Mickey Miles Podcast. From 5K fun runs to full marathons, this is the podcast that helps you learn everything you need to know about running Disney races. The Mickey Miles Podcast is not affiliated with, authorized, or endorsed by, or in any way officially connected with Run Disney, the Walt Disney Company, Disney Enterprises, Inc., or any of their affiliates. Now, here are your hosts for the Mickey Miles Podcast, Michelle Scribner-McLean and Mike Scopa.
Welcome to episode 97 of the Mickey Miles Podcast. My name is Mike Scopa from WDW Today, and with me on the show, besides my FM voice, is Michelle Scribner-McLean. Michelle, we're in the air right now. We're on our way to California, right?
Well, right now? I don't think right now we are, but as we're recording this, I think we're on terra firma, but when this airs, we will be on our way to California. For what reason? We'll be meeting in Denver, right? And then flying from Denver to California to
eat some Häagen-Dazs ice cream.
Yes. Cannot wait to do the Dumbo Double Dare, but even more excited to see lots of old friends and some new friends. Can't wait. And Mike, do you remember when our meet is going to be for Mickey Miles?
I'm guessing it's Friday at 3 o'clock.
Well, it's going to be at Downtown Disney on Saturday, August 31st.
Well,
at 3 o'clock.
Pretty close.
See, you would have arrived early, and, well, you could have ice cream twice, so I'll just tell you it's Friday and Saturday. So, Mike,
I still go Friday.
Yeah, you could go Friday. You have a little bit of a cold, huh?
Yeah, I woke up with really bad sore throat. We're recording this on Saturday, and last night I woke up at about midnight and I had a wicked sore throat, and I'm thinking, how am I going to do my training, my last weekend of training? And I didn't sleep half the night, but I got up and I'm trying to mimic the Disneyland Dumbo Double Dare or whatever it's called. And so I ran 10K today, and I'm going to try to do half marathon distance tomorrow. We'll see what happens.
Well, same with me. And I returned to New Hampshire after several weeks in Orlando to 54 degree temperature to run this morning. And I'll tell you, I was running like the wind. It felt felt very cool after warm Florida weather. So having said that, I don't know if I told the time of the meet, but it's Saturday, August 31st at 3 p.m. So far we have 67 people who are going to be there, and happy to announce that we're going to have some buddies who are interviewing people and doing show openings. So at least two or three of our Mickey Miles podcast buddies, if you run into them, they may ask you some questions about your experience. Because as much as Mike and I would love to interview 67 people, I don't think we're going to have the time. So I'm excited about that. Ready for a shout-out, Michael?
As always.
All right. So this shout-out goes to listener Peter Hairston. And Peter, we love it when people post their accomplishments. I think that, we want to build a really friendly and supportive running community around running Disney races or any races. And Peter posted some photos of himself and his kids doing the color run, which is something I really want to do. Mike, I know you're probably not as interested as I am, but the color run sounds, it's all over the country and it looks really fun. And if you look on our Facebook page, you can see that Peter had a great time. So shout out to Peter.
Shout out to Peter. Peter, shout out. Shout out to Peter. Well, as this is Thursday, it's time for a, well, it doesn't have to be Thursday to be a question show, but we have some questions that we wanted to attend to before we took off for California. And so we will be doing questions. And as always, ladies first, Michelle, please read the first question.
I will. And the question is from Aaron D'Aaron. I'm sorry, Aaron. Aaron D'Aranio. And she says, hi, I'm headed to Walt Disney World in October with my family. I'm running my first Disney race, the Tower of Terror 10-miler. Also, it's the first race longer than 5K in a long time, long in capital letters. Training is going well. Long run today of 11 miles. 2 weeks ago, I did 10, averaging around a 12:30 mile using Galloway. My question is, what now? Obviously, I want to work to maintain my distance for long runs, but should I just work on speeding up, keep extending my distance, or try to maintain where I am until the race? When I started to think back in May, I thought I'd really be lucky to finish without getting swept. Now I've got a pretty good chance, and I want to keep working. Love the podcast. I save it in a few other Disney podcasts for my long runs. Added motivation to get out there and run so I can finally listen to them. Probably why I've found myself at a schedule mileage-wise compared to the Galloway program. So, Aaron, we are responsible for you being an overachiever here, it sounds like. What do you think, Mike? So now she has the confidence. It's August now, heading into September. She has the confidence that she's going to be able to do it. What do you think?
I'm going to take a shot and say her name is Aaron D'Aranio. But anyways, I think that this is great, Aaron. I think that one of the things that I want to caution you about is trying to overdo it. Now that you've gotten to a certain threshold, you're looking to do things. I would say wait until after the Tower of Terror race before you do anything. I don't want you to overtrain. I don't want you to get hurt. I don't want you to do anything that you will regret. So my advice to you is to keep up the good work. Don't overdo it, and especially don't run too many miles close to the race itself. You want to give yourself a chance to rest those legs. And then after the race, you may want to think about what your next goal is. If you are doing 11 miles, I think you're ready for a half marathon. I don't know if you are going to do a half marathon, but you're right on schedule for sure. And yeah, you might be a little ahead of the game right now, but just try to maintain what you're doing, and don't get hurt, and just keep your fitness up, and you'll be fine. And wait till after the Tower of Terror before you go on to the next threshold, whatever that may be.
Well, I agree with you. I think our solution is we have to stop producing these podcasts so Aaron can slow down. But because we like to produce them so much, I agree 100%. It seems to me, Aaron, that your goal was to do the Tower of Terror, and that still is your goal. I'm not saying that you shouldn't keep running and you shouldn't maybe try to increase your speed, but I agree with Mike that if you overdo it, you run the risk of injury. I'd suggest that you maybe work on some other things that can help you with your running and endurance. Maybe throw in some strength training or some cross training. Do some biking, do some swimming, things like that to help you. And it sounds like you're in good shape. Get through the Tower of Terror and don't overtrain, because you don't want to be in a position of being injured for that thing that is your goal. And then move on to your next goal after that. So good for you, Aaron. We hope to see you at the Tower of Terror.
Our next question, Michelle, sounds very familiar. It's from John Thompson, who says, hi, Mike and Michelle. First, love the podcast. I often listen while running, which makes those long runs much more enjoyable. I have a question about staying in condition in the winter. I live in the Northeast, where the winters can be brutal. Last year, I did my first half marathon, the Walt Disney World Half. And since it was in January, I had to train through the winter. And I'm sure you understand the joy of doing a 10 or 12-mile run with a wind chill of about 0 degrees. This year, I'm planning to run my first full marathon in November. And I am thinking of doing another full or half in December. After that, I probably won't be doing any more races until early spring. So my question for you is this. What do you think is a reasonable distance to run in order to keep in condition through the winter, with the understanding that the conditions are likely
to be miserable. Thanks again for the great podcast, and keep it up. Okay, Michelle, what do you think?
I think this is an interesting question. I'm not an expert in this, but I can tell you what I've been doing, John. I have been trying to keep a base of about 10 miles, and here's my reasoning for doing that. 10 miles is good enough for me to jump in and do a half marathon whenever I feel the need or the mood. And since I've been doing a lot of local races, I found that that's really helpful. From 10 miles, you can work your way out, 3 or 4 months to do a marathon. And I think, you can work your base higher and higher from that. But 10 miles for me works. Unlike you, I will not run outside when it's 0 degree wind chill. I run in a track, and it can be maddening running around circles for, 7 laps per mile. So I understand. But I think if you do a half in or a full in December and no more races until spring, so let's say, you're 4 or 5 months, I think if every 2 weeks you do 10 miles or 11 miles, you will maintain that base. Do you agree with me, Mike?
Yeah, I agree for the most part, Michelle. I think that since John is done in December and he won't be doing anything until early spring, he may want to get into some kind of a routine where maybe he runs for an hour on twice a week, like a Tuesday and a Thursday, and then one day of the weekend he'll run maybe an hour and a half or so. And I don't know what time of the day he runs, but obviously during the winter it would be much more milder in the midday hour or so. So that's where I would suggest running maybe an hour and a half or maybe 2 hours on a Saturday or a Sunday. But I agree with you. I think 9 or 10 miles, doing that maybe once a week or every other week, keeps you in condition for doing a half. Now, for a marathon, you may want to push that up to 15. But again, you don't want to overdo it. You don't want to wear yourself out. So I think you're doing okay, John. I think we feel your pain. We're New Hampshireites, so we feel your pain. So do the best job you can. And I think everybody pretty much takes a little bit of a rest during January, February, and March anyway. So welcome to the club.
It's interesting too, Mike, that having just run for several weeks in Florida, I feel like Floridians and people from the South have the opposite issue. It's very, very hard to run July and August in Florida. So I bet those folks have their off season too. To run 10 miles in the 83% humidity is rough. So.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, our next question comes from Heather from New Orleans, and she says, "Hey guys, love the show. I always listen to it during my training runs as it helps keep me focused and motivated. My husband and I have started running back in April, and I've completed several 5Ks. We use Active.com's Couch to 5K app, and now we've completed that training, we've moved on to the 10K training app. At the end of the 5K app, we were running for a solid 30 minutes without any walking intervals and averaging about 3.1 miles in 30 minutes, 40 minutes when you factor in the 5-minute warm-up and cool-down. Current training on the 10K app has us running for 4 intervals of 10 minutes and 1 of walking. And it looks like the next few weeks it will have us up to 15-1 and then 17-1. We have 2 5Ks coming up back-to-back, one in August and then in September. August 31st and then on September 1st. I was wondering if we should continue with the 10K training or hold back and just do the 5K 30-minute runs. My concern is if the intervals on the 10K training would mess up our groove for the 5K where we wouldn't normally do intervals, or does that longer time and distance on the 10K training help us going into the 5K? I know this isn't specific to Run Disney, but our ultimate goal is to do Run Disney, and all of our smaller 5Ks and 10Ks are just our way of keeping our training in order to reach that goal. Thanks." What a cool question. I like that question. Mike, what do you think?
All right, I'm going to be this could be blasphemy, but I'm thinking that the thing is, Heather, that you are doing very good with the training that you have settled into for the 5K. And honestly, I would continue using whatever you're using for the 5K, I would use for the 10K. Because I think that if you fool around with it, there may be some problems that you may encounter. So I would say stick to the 5K until you finish that August 31st and September 1st back-to-back race. And then if you have a 10K that you're training for, then go to the 10K training. Michelle?
I'm going to disagree a little bit. I think there's one bit of information that Heather didn't give us, and that is what is her goal for the 5K? If her goal is to increase her pace or her speed, then I would say stick with the 5K. If her goal is to just get some more training moving towards the 10K, I would stick with the 10K. I don't see any reason to – I mean, you're already able to do the 5K distance with no problem, it sounds like. Another thing you could do is just do the 5K straight running for 30 minutes and then move to intervals for the second part of the last 3.1 miles. So that's another option. So if you want to increase your speed, you might want to stick with the 5K app. If you want to just keep on working towards that longer distance, then go to the 10K app.
Okay. Remember John Thompson from the second question? Well, he's back with another.
I think he's Hoot Dad, too, on Twitter.
He's Hoot Dad. Yes, mm-hmm. He is. He says, "Hi, Mike and Michelle. Love the podcast, and I also love to read and post weekly run updates on the Facebook page. I was listening to Listener Question episode 91 while on my morning run and was particularly intrigued by a question from a listener. Sorry, I don't recall his name, and I am too lazy to go back to listen again. A listener who had lost a bunch of weight, about 70 pounds, I think, and was concerned about because his training for the TZ, the Tower of Terror 10-miler, was not going well. Now I am someone who has basically battled with his weight his whole life, and after setting and accomplishing the goal of running my first half marathon in Walt Disney World in January, I have set myself a new goal of a full marathon by year's end, and more to the point, I have set a goal of losing 40 pounds or so. To date, I have lost about 25, so I know how difficult it is to lose weight and keep it off. So my message to that listener is this. You have already accomplished an amazing feat of losing all that weight. This is something most people in your position cannot do. You have shown what you can accomplish if you set your mind to it, so have confidence in yourself. Clearly you rock. Thanks again for all that you guys do." And you know, Michelle, he's absolutely right. You need to feel good about yourself, and the more you feel good about yourself, the more success you'll have. So I think that anyone who has lost weight, and we know how tough that is and how difficult it is, needs to be applauded. And, you know, whatever they're doing, keep doing, and they'll reach their goals, whatever they may be.
Yeah, I think, you know, weight loss is something that we think. I know, Mike, you and I talk about diet and weight loss all the time. It's not always easy to do when you're running. But I really appreciate the support, John. That was really nice of you to write in. And if you want to read more about John, you can read his blog. I love when people share blogs on the Facebook page, too. It's hootdatruns.blogspot.com. And if you have a blog and want to share your successes and your challenges, please post it on the Facebook page. But thanks, John, for sending that in. Okay, our next question is from Terry Mann, our buddy Terry Mann from Alabama, and he says, "Scared to death about my first full marathon ever, the Disney, this January. So I just registered for another marathon in Huntsville, Alabama, to replace my last long run before starting my taper 3 weeks before the Disney race. It seemed logical when I first had that thought, but as soon as I completed the registration process, I started to have second thoughts. What do you think? Oh, I also have the Tower of Terror 10-miler and the Music City Half in Nashville right in the middle of my marathon training. The number of miles may be fine, but emotionally and mentally, I may have added more pressure on myself than I should have. I'm trying to squeeze a little bit of practicing law in between runs and showers. Oh, and if any Mickey Milers are running in Huntsville, let's connect because I need a shoulder to cry on. I'm curious what you think." I definitely have thoughts about this, but I will go to my co-host first.
You know, Terry, I think this is going to be a piece of cake. I think that the idea of registering for the Huntsville, Alabama marathon was a great idea. I think that that is a nice dry run. You should treat that as a training run. and you should take mental notes as you do that race and see where you may need to bolster your training so that you'll have an even easier time in January with the Walt Disney World Full Marathon. So I think you'd be okay. Just, you know, have a positive thought whenever you register for a race, because you wouldn't register for a race unless you felt deep in your heart that you could do it. So good luck. I think you're going to be okay. All right, Michelle, let's hear from you.
Well, you know, I think you have probably a 23 or 24-mile training run that week. I don't know what program you're using, Terry. I think it was a brilliant idea, and here's the reason why. I think that anyone can run a half marathon. Anyone can run a marathon if you put the training in. Part of it is putting the training in, but a good part of it is the mental preparation. I know that it took me about 4 or 5 half marathons before mentally I felt like I knew what was involved in a half marathon. As Mike will tell you, and several other people on Team All Ears will tell you, I got pretty worked up the night before the my first marathon at Disney. And I think that having a marathon under my belt mentally would have told me that I was able to do it. Now, I did the training, and I did all the training runs, so I knew that I could do it, but doing it in a race is a little different. I know that a good buddy of ours, Mary Jane Cancel, I think she ran the Space Coast Marathon before she did her first marathon. And I think it's a brilliant move. I think it keeps you on target on your training and also mentally gives you that boost. Because, Terry, when you're there in January and you're at the starting corrals, you will already have done it. So I said good for you, and I hope that you are able to connect up with people in Huntsville to maybe you can run together or just give each other a high five before the race. Keep
us
posted. Yeah.
Good luck. Good luck, Terry. Our next question comes from Kelly, who says, "Hi, Michelle and Mike. I just recently found your podcast in the last month, and I want you to know how much I enjoy it. I have been listening to all your current podcasts and catching up on older ones every time I run. You have made my weekly long runs infinitely more enjoyable. My husband and I will be running for the first time in the Tower of Terror 10-miler this October, and my children will be running in the Happy Haunted 5K and the 200-meter kids race. My first question has to do with packet pickups. Do I need to bring my children with me to the expo to pick up their packets? They are 11, 8, and 4. If they are not with me, then do I need that signed waiver that I keep reading about? The second question is about the Villains Bash. Our parents will be bringing the kids there to wait for us to finish our race. I was planning on renting a Disney stroller for the week for my 4-year-old, since he's really too big for normal strollers, but still too little to walk the parks all day. So will the stroller rental place be open during the Villains Bash, or should I make other arrangements for that night? Thank you so much for taking the time to read this. I'm really hoping you know the answers to these questions." All right, Michelle, why don't you take the first one, and I think we both know what the answer is to the second one.
Yes, so the first one is you don't need to bring your kids to the expo. In fact, we have a good friend, Amanda Gonzalez, who tells us that she will not bring her 4 kids to the expo because she can't get anything done. They will need waivers. I've run Disney races with my son Liam before. You need to sign their waivers as their parent. You can pick up their packets. There are some things at the expo that they might want to see, but it you know, if you're like me, you just want to get the job done. You want to go get the packets, the numbers, and you want to get the T-shirts, and you want to maybe shop around the expo. So you may not want to bring them, but you don't have to bring them to the expo. So that's good. The second question, Mike, about
the
stroller?
The second question is that we both know Shannon Tanner, who is the founder of Orlando Stroller Rentals. And that's the largest private stroller rental in the United States. And my suggestion is to contact them, the number, if you want to take a moment and pause this podcast and then come back and I'll give you the number. It is 1-800-281-0884. And you can also find them online at www.orlandostrollerrentals.com. mickeymiles.com. Now, Shannon is not a sponsor, but she's a friend, and she's got a great company. She and her husband do a great job, and they have been – actually, they've been recognized by Disney as doing a good job too. So I would you know, recommend them far and above anyone else. They do a great job. They'll bring the stroller right to you, and they'll take it when you're leaving on your vacation, so you'll have it. And at very, very good price. So that's what I would suggest.
So we haven't really answered the question, though, about whether or not Disney strollers will be available. I think they will. I actually don't know the answer to that question. But I think anytime a park is open for anything, the strollers are available. And you know, if you rent a stroller from Disney, if you're in Magic Kingdom in the morning and you take your receipt and go to Epcot, you've rented that stroller for the whole day. So I think it will be available. However, I completely agree with you, Mike, that one of the reasons that I would recommend Orlando stroller rental is because of the pickup and the drop-off. But I think money-wise, you're going to be saving money if you do something like that versus the cost of renting a stroller every day. And I know exactly, you know, the age of your kid. And my kids had the same issue. They were too young to walk all over the parks all day long, but you definitely needed that stroller. I would definitely, their strollers are excellent. I see them all around the parks, and I know that they'll deliver it right to your resort and pick it up. So it might be worth, rather than risking the stroller rental, it might be worth looking into that. So I'd love to hear what happens, Kelly. Let us know. But if you do rely on Disney strollers, I do believe that you won't have any problem that night. And even if there is no stroller, you know, there's not a whole lot of walking around. It's not like park walking that you're going to be walking miles and miles for the Villains Bash. Right, Mike?
Right, but it will be late. And for small children, it might be a little, you know, that's about probably it. Yeah.
Okay. So, Kelly, let us know what happens. Our next question is from Megan Dorsey, and she's from Sugarland, Texas. Doesn't that sound like a nice place to live? Sugarland. I like that.
Yeah,
Willy Wonka lives there.
that's where you want to go for Halloween.
Yeah. Michelle and Mike, I found your show in May when I was looking for podcasts to get me in the Disney spirit for our family trip in July. Thank you for offering so much information to new runners. I wasn't in good shape. In fact, at the time, I was literally on the couch after shoulder surgery. Oh, sorry, Megan. I found your advice so encouraging that once I was out of my shoulder sling and able to walk without jarring my shoulder, I started training for my first 5K. I loved the Galloway method because it allowed me to start with 10 seconds running and 50 seconds walking, doable even at my fitness level. I'm signed up for a local race at the end of September and Mickey's Jingle Jungle 5K in November, my first Disney race. I keep telling people that the Disney race is my motivation and my reward. That's so true. What suggestions do you have for runners who are trying to lose weight? I get fitted for shoes at a local running store, but I want to avoid injury. I'm curious how hydration and nutrition work for those of us who have a number of pounds to lose. Love the show and hope to meet you at a Disney race one of these days. Mike, what do you think?
Well, I am neither a nutritionist nor do I play one on the internet. So I can only suggest what I try to do. The thing is, Megan, that if you know approximately how many calories you would take in before you started your running program, I would try to keep it at least – try not to go over that for when you have started your running program. I think a lot of people, when they start a running program, find that they, gee, I'm getting a little hungry, I'm doing all this exercise, and they increase their input. I think if you can keep it the same as it was prior to you starting a running program, I think that's half the battle. As far as hydration and nutrition, I don't think you can hydrate enough as a runner. We've often heard, and it's very true, there is no way to replenish all the fluid that you lose when you run. Those of us who carry hydration belts, we try, but there's always going to be less than 100% that we replenish. So what you want to do is you want to find some nutrition books, find some books that talk about hydration, and see how many ounces of fluid you should be drinking a day. I'm not going to say drink 8 glasses or 6 glasses. I'm not sure what is best. I try to do it myself. I try to drink every day. I'm always trying to make sure I have plenty of electrolytes and plenty of hydration in my cells before I run. And that means not necessarily drinking the night before, but all week long. As far as nutrition goes, obviously nutrition works hand in hand with water and hydration. And there's a lot of resources out there. There are many things on the internet that you can check to see, you know, what kind of nutrition is best for runners. I'm not an expert, but I know that you don't want to eat a lot of fat, that's for sure. Michelle?
So, well, I think it's an interesting question, and I think it's a personal question, and it really there are a lot of factors involved. So, of course, the first thing I'd recommend is that you go talk to your doctor. If it's a significant amount of weight that you need to lose, your doctor may actually suggest that you see a dietitian. I know that for me, I've been trying to lose 20 pounds for the past several years, and I find that sometimes running makes it really tricky because I'm so hungry after long runs. And so some of the things that I've done to help me is to keep a journal of what I'm eating. There are great fitness apps like Lose It. If you join a place like Weight Watchers, they have apps that you can use too. But journaling what you eat and what you drink, I think, is really helpful. It's important really not to use your exercise as an excuse to, say, have that piece of pie or have that second helping because you worked out that day. And I think, you know, if the calories that you're eating are healthy calories and you try to eat more protein, that's usually a good way to keep the hunger off. The other thing that I would recommend is a book by Jeff Galloway and his wife Barbara called Running and Fat Burning for Women. And Jeff recommended this to me as part of a kind of like a series of books that I might want to read, because I'm doing the e-coaching with him. And I find it very, very interesting and you know, sensible advice. But I think the number one thing is journaling and trying really hard to not replace those calories that you're burning, working off with fat and carbohydrates. That's my suggestion.
And a good suggestion it was. Our next question comes from Dave Welty, who says, "Hi, Mike and Michelle. By listening to your podcast ever since the Walt Disney World Marathon this past January, I have set PRs in the 10K and half marathon and achieved a sub 4-hour marathon."
Well, wow, sounds like I need to listen to Dave's podcast because I want to do that.
Yeah, nice job, David. I have always used only one pair of running shoes at a time, getting a new pair after 400 to 500 miles of use. But this time, after hearing your advice from the shoes episode 77, I got two pair of the Nike Pegasus 30s. Not sure if you mentioned it already, but since I will be running with two shoes, how often will you recommend I alternate rotate them? I guess he means two pairs of shoes.
Yeah, I know. I hope he's running with two shoes.
How often would you recommend I alternate rotate them? How often would you recommend, he asks, how often would you recommend that I alternate or rotate them? Again, thank you for all you do, and I'll see you at Häagen-Dazs.
Now, after we just told Megan about losing weight, we're going to meet people at Häagen-Dazs. So I think what I understand this question to be is how often should he switch running out of the two shoes? Would you say that's correct, Mike? The two pairs of shoes. I hope he's running with two shoes.
Yes.
Running with one shoe and one barefoot is not a good idea. I can tell you what I do. I have three pairs of shoes now, and I rotate my two. I have a pair of, I have to say it, Mike, I bought some Hoka One Ones, and so I've been running with those for my short runs, and they're very, very comfortable, but I am going to stick with my primary shoes, my Asics. I have two pairs of Asics, the same type, and I alternate pretty much every other run. I run in one and then run in the other because I want them to wear evenly. So that's what I do. Mike has probably 47 pairs of shoes, and he can wear a new pair every day of the month, right, Mike?
Well, I've kind of cut back on that. But what I want to mention to Dave is that I would, you know, use anything that works well for you. But here's the thing that I want to throw caution, and that is you have an idea regarding how often you need to replace your shoes. And if you are going to use two pairs of shoes, then you need to stick with that rotation for whatever it takes to get to the number of miles that you get out of each pair. For instance, you say you get 400 to 500 miles of use.
Which is a lot.
Which is a lot. Usually it's around 350. But if you're getting around 400, then this means that if you're using two pairs, you should get 800. So you need to keep a really good record on how you, you know, what you're putting in for miles for those shoes. So if you are going to switch them every other day, then you need to keep track of the miles for each pair. So that's an issue that may or may not be important. I know that when I begin running on a new pair of shoes, I take a magic marker, or what do they call those? A marquee or whatever.
Sharpie.
And I write it on my shoe when I start it. And I also make note of it in my daily mile, my running record. So I know when I started and I can keep track of miles. I try to switch out of shoes before my knees and legs tell me I need to switch out of them. And for me, it's about 300 to 350 miles. So that's the only thing I would say. Whatever you do, you're going to have to stick with it in order to make sure that you really get what you normally get out of your shoes.
Yeah, that's interesting because I didn't think about this until you just mentioned this, that I don't actually buy two pairs of new shoes at the same time. And I have always a pair that's on their way out and a pair that's on their way in. So I buy a new pair of shoes every 3 or 4 months. And so I have a newer pair and an older pair, and I rotate them. And then my older pair goes out, I buy a new pair. I mark it on my calendar, on my iCal, on my Mac, to tell me when I got it. And then I can use my running records to help me. But, Mike?
I just want to mention one more thing, Michelle. I try to buy two pairs, but what I do, even though I have, and I actually have one pair that's relatively new that I'm training in right now, and I have its brother or its sister that's in the closet, and I'll go to that pair when this pair is worn down. I'm always looking for shoes. I'm always looking for bargains. And when you find a bargain, go for it. Don't wait until you are, you know, within 25 miles of saying, I really need to replace my shoe, or your knees are hurting or your legs are hurting. I think it's a good practice to always keep your eye open for a bargain. And when you see a bargain, why not buy two pairs of shoes?
Or if, as we say up here, a bargain. So actually, that was my next thing that I wanted to mention, that where are the places that you find bargains? I know that I like to look online. One of the places that I've used many times is Running Warehouse. And I was actually looking today. They have a liquidation sale, and they have my shoes that I buy that are like $30 or $40 off the price. I was at a shoe store today, and I saw these same shoes for, you know, $30, $40 more. I know that, Mike, isn't there a website that you like to use too?
The one that I think has probably the most competitive prices are, I believe it's called holasports.com, HOLASPORTS.com. I think that they offer as best a price on many popular shoes as any of them. And that's not to say that your local running store or like Sports Authority or Dick's or any place. I know that, Michelle. I told you I happened to be in Florida a couple of months ago, and I happened to be somewhere, and there was this store called Shoe Carnival. I thought, what the heck? I'll go in. And I saw my model, and they were marked down by about $30. So I bought two pair. Crazy colors, black and red and white, but I don't care.
Black and white, red and white. I think some people pay a lot of New Balance money for.
Yeah, well, I've noticed that a lot of running shoes now. Well, they're either very, very colorful, or they're dark with very bright shoelaces. So, you know, that was I did not intend on buying shoes that day, but I thought, hey, strike while the iron is hot. So I just want to throw that out there. I think it's always good to have a pair waiting.
Yeah, I'd love to hear what other people try too, because I do extensive Google searches on whatever pair I use. You know, I use Asics, Nimbus, and sometimes I use Kayano, and there are a lot of bargains to be had out there if you keep looking. So Anyway, that's a very long answer to a short question, but Dave, we can't wait to see you. We'll be on our way to California when you hear this, and we will see you at Häagen-Dazs. Can't wait. And we'll see you with your Nike Pegasus 30s, too. Okay, so I think that's it for questions today. Yes?
No more questions. I guess that's it.
Okay.
So, ouch.
Did you trip?
Yes, I tripped. So, Michelle, I guess we're on our way to California, and we will be doing a lot of talking with a lot of people out there, including recording some interviews that we hope to include on our 100th show. Our 100th show is coming up pretty soon, and it will probably be longer than our usual show length because we're going to talk with a lot of people, and we want a lot of people to lend their voices to our 100th show. And we thank everyone who's been listening over the past year. It's almost a year.
Oh, my gosh.
And,
time
and,
flies.
So, Michelle, I'll be seeing you in California, and I'll be seeing a lot of our listeners in California. Both of us will. And,
so, Mike, I know we talk about Run Disney, but what attraction are you most looking forward to going on in California? Because I know you've been to Disneyland once, right?
Well, the last time we went and we did the Disneyland half, the Haunted Mansion was closed because they were doing the haunted holidays
overlay.
Mm-hmm. So I'm keeping my fingers crossed so I can see that. The other of the attractions I'm looking forward to is Indiana Jones and the Temple of the Forbidden Eye and Pirates of the Caribbean. And also looking forward to Cars Land, of course,
yes,
which
yes.
was being built when we were there. And something we didn't get to see, and I don't know if we'll be able to see it with our schedule, and since we'll be running early, is I'd like to see Disneyland's version of Fantasmic.
Mm-hmm, yeah, we didn't get to see that before. Also, you're a Space Mountain, Disneyland Space Mountain fan, too.
I like Disneyland Space Mountain more than Disneyland Space Disney World. Space Mountain in Orlando for many reasons. I won't go into it except that I think that the comfort of the ride vehicle is becoming more and more of an issue with me rather than the thrill. I think that the Disneyland Rockin' Space Mountain, which was supposed to come out to Walt Disney World in 2007 but never did, I think that it's a much better ride than the one in Orlando. So looking forward to seeing the park that Walt built and seeing everybody out there. And it should be fun running through Angel Stadium again and through the textile section of Anaheim. So that will be fun.
Cool. Looking forward to it.
Okay. So
this episode of the Mickey Mouse Podcast has been brought to you by MEI Travel and Mouse Van Travel. When you want to be treated the best, you need to go to the best. And when we say the best, we're talking about the vacation planners at meitravel.com and Mouse Van Travel. They're experts in all things Disney and many other areas too. So give them a try. Go to meitravel.com or mousefantravel.com, and you can get to their site also by clicking on their banner at mickeymilespodcast.com.
For Michelle Scribner-McLean, this is Mike Scopa. California, here we come. We'll see you on the road.
Thanks for joining us on today's episode of the Mickey Miles Podcast. We hope you enjoyed listening. Our discussion continues on Facebook at facebook.com/MickeyMilesPodcast, where you can give us your comments and feedback on the show. You can also follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/MickeyMilesPod. And if you have any questions for us, you can send them to questions@MickeyMilesPodcast.com. We'll try to answer them as soon as possible. For all of us here at the Mickey Miles Podcast, this is Rick Gray. Saying until next time, thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the road.
California, here I come, yeah, right back where I started from, where bowers of flowers bloom in the spring. Each morning at dawning, birdies sing and everything. A sun-kissed mist, don't be late off. That's why I can hardly wait. Come on, come on, open up, open up, open up that golden gate. California, here I am.